Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Morbid early and ad-free. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to a Morbid Network podcast.
The Widows are back. Big Hair and Bigger Lies collide in Desperate Deadly Widows, the highly anticipated follow-up to Audible's best-selling Young Rich Widows, where nothing's more dangerous than a widow with nothing left to lose. Set in Providence, Rhode Island, 1987, 2 years ago, a plane carrying four law firm partners exploded. And so did the cushy lives of their once wealthy wives. Now, Crystal fights to keep their fallen law firm afloat. Justine hustles as a lawyer in training. Meredith owns and operates the strip club where she once danced. And Camille orchestrates honeypot schemes. Until one of her arrangements goes wrong, and she becomes implicated in the mayor's mysterious murder. With the widow's bonds now tested, will the women cement their friendships, or is loyalty a luxury they just can't afford? In this thrilling expansion of the widow's universe, Desperate Deadly Widows unfolds as an edge-of-your-seat thriller, where desperation wears stilettos, baby, trust is a poker chip, and redemption comes at the cost of everything you thought you knew. Visit audible.com/deadlywidows to listen now. Travel's great, but planning for travel can be time-consuming and difficult. That's where One Travel comes in. With One Travel, you'll find everything you need to book the perfect trip. Flights, hotels, cars, transportation, it's all right there. With One Travel, you can book online, via app, or even pick up the phone and talk to a travel advisor ready to help you make your selections. Visit onetravel.com or call 877-290-1880. Plan it, book it, live it. One Travel.
Hey Weirdos, I'm Ash.
And I'm Elena.
And I am Tobias.
And this is a very special edition of Morbid.
Guys, we've been waiting for it. We told you about it a while ago, so you've been holding onto your butts for a long time waiting for this. We have Tobias Forge from Ghost on the show today, and we are so grateful that he's taking the time to do this. Thank you so much, Tobias.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you.
Of course.
Anytime.
This is very exciting for me. I've been like raving about you guys for weeks, like probably months at this point.
Months, definitely.
I'm a newer ghoul. I've entered into the space this year. And the way that it happened was kind of funny because I had no idea that I was missing out on so much. I was so mad at myself. I was like, oh my God, I'm so late to this game. But what happened was one night we were recording because we have another show. It's a horror movie podcast and we usually do it late at night. And we were recording it for hours upstairs. And when we came back downstairs, my husband was sitting in the living room in like the dark. And he was like, I have to tell you about something. And I was like, what? And he's like, I just heard about this band Ghost. And I can't believe I didn't know who they were. But I just sat and listened to the entire Impera album. And you have to listen to it. So for the next like 3 hours, we just sat and listened to it. And we were both freaking out about it. It was like this cool little like bonding thing. Because I haven't really felt this way about music in a while, so I had to tell you that because I appreciate it so much that you guys have like brought that back for us.
Well, that's very nice to hear, especially since I know that the record is like 44 minutes, so you must have heard it several times.
We literally went through every album after that.
okay. Well, thank you very much.
No, absolutely.
Yeah, welcome into the weird place.
It's a great place. That's where we thrive, in the weird place. And we were so upset because we found out that you were in Worcester, Massachusetts. Like, I think it was like the week before and we had just missed you. And then you were going to a European tour. So we were like, no.
It was right when you found them.
Yeah, we're like, no.
Well, great news is that we tour now and then. So we're usually back, somewhere in the vicinity again. At some point.
Well, that was what came up finally. It was when we saw you were coming to Providence, Rhode Island. We were like, all right, we can do that. We can make it to that one. And we made it to that one. It was an amazing show. I think it was last week.
Yeah, it was last week. I've never seen Elena happier at a concert, and I've gone to many concerts with her.
Yeah, it was a real moment. And I also have 6-year-old twin daughters, and I know you're a twin dad. I've been told that by many people now.
Correct.
Yes, twin vibes. They also love ghosts now, and they were very angry that they couldn't come to the show. So they made me film like several videos and show them.
we're going to be around. So there's plenty of time. If they still like it next time, they're more than welcome to come with you.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We saw a bunch of kids in the crowd, actually, like with their parents, so, with those like little headphones so their ears didn't get hurt.
Yeah, it was so cute.
It was so cute to see.
Yeah, there are always a lot of kids in our shows. It's a very, very wide span of not only, you know, styles and sort of subcultures and to very normal looking people that just look like they just accidentally stepped into the wrong thing. But also
that might
ages.
Have been Ash, actually.
That was me.
No, but it's spanning like, yeah, dare I say 4 generations? Yeah, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Like the eldest in the room is usually, you know, old rock fans of, you know, born in the 40s, 50s, like our parent generation. And then you have, you know, the 60s, the first breed of kids, and then you know, down to the newly borns. So yeah, it's a very it's sort of a family oriented thing, which you know, sometimes I sort of scratch my head on that one, because there's a lot of F words and insinuations on this, that, and the other. And
oh yeah,
about things going here, there, and everywhere and stuff. So it's like, well, but okay, if people like it. I mean, I come from a very, very liberal background, so where there was hardly any censorship whatsoever in our home. So I am just glad if that, but I, because I've also realized growing up, and especially as a grown up, I've understood that my upbringing might have been a little bit of an anomaly.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm always a little bit of like, you guys know what you're, have you seen the show? Or did your kid just ask you to come here?
Because, what happened?
No, we like your band as well. Okay, cool. Yeah. Sure. Because I don't want to, you know. You don't want to, you know, as much as you want to provoke and all that, or, you know, I spend my first 25 years in life wanting to provoke and piss people off. But as a grown up, you're a little bit more, you know, especially in this day and age when people might react negatively in a way that is very negative to anything that they don't like or that they might find offensive or not God-fearing or whatever, or political or anything. You don't want people to have that reaction with their kid on a rock show.
No.
Yeah, that's not what you need. You know, you're just trying to have fun.
Their hay fork out.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
We don't need that. And that's, I think, like, because the way that obviously my girls are 6 years old. So there's been a lot of like, what was he saying there? And I'm like, yeah, I don't know. Like, peanut butter. Don't worry about it. Like,
up to interpretation.
You just like the music. It's okay.
You're like, go to school.
Yeah, no, I had to go through the whole, because my kids has also sort of picked up on not only me being in a band, but
I wondered,
but
that.
Also this maybe this is a later question, but just on the note of how you have to explain something, and a question came my way, and I was like, so my friend is saying like Mary on a cross is it's kind of kinky. in what way?
You're like, we'll talk about it later.
In what way?
Just sit down
and explain. We have a pretty open conversation about like about things, and I try not to divert too much, and you know, try not to have too many taboos. You might say before a subject like, this is things that you usually don't talk about, but just because we're talking about it, let's plow through it. But it, you know, it came to that point where it's like, because we're obviously in our family, we speak English as well. My son even is almost more fluent in English than he is in Swedish. I mean, he speaks Swedish pretty well. But sometimes, you know, I have to double check. And that's where it really comes to a point where it's like, you do know what go down means, right?
It's hard to miss that.
Yeah. And then you have to, okay. Yeah. Okay. You know that. All right. Yeah. So in this context, it doesn't mean go down. It means like you're going down in history, or you're going down as in you're falling from grace. But I wrote it in a way that makes it sound like I mean going down on. Oh, okay.
That is a perfect explanation.
And it's like, but you have to, but how are you going to have a conversation like that if you're bound to not talk about sex, or mm-hmm. bound to talk about what people do in real life? That does not work.
No,
no, not at all.
On the other hand, I'm just because we're talking about funny things here. Years ago, when I'm not going to say who asked me, I don't want to throw anyone under the bus here, but it was extremely funny, even though I found it to be cringe at the time.
Oh no!
We were sitting on the subway in Stockholm, and there were a lot of people sitting, everybody's kind of silent, and then one of my kids asked me, like, Dad, what does vagina taste like?
Just on the silent.
Oh yeah. And you just see the woman next to my kid, who's just like looking at me like, what are you going to answer?
she's like, I'm waiting to see the answer to this.
That's a lot of pressure to answer that question in front of a train full of people.
Oh, yeah. That is...
That's amazing.
Yeah. Mic drop.
Wow. That's like parenthood right there.
That's a win, though.
Yeah, well, that depends on what I answered.
That's very true.
I'm not going to go that far. So,
you don't have to. Just that was amazing.
You had some questions? You had some questions?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I agree with you that like sugarcoating stuff to kids doesn't really work that well. So we're of the same mind that way. I try to be not scary when I answer things like about like death and all that, because they're six now. So those kind of things are coming up.
You go just far enough.
Just, yeah, I give you the facts. Otherwise, they're going to later be like, you lied to me.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, I think you should avoid that to the best of your ability.
Exactly. But I'm going to take like a hard shift here, because one of the songs that I love off of Impera is Respite on the Spittlefields. It's like mm-hmm. one of my favorites. And I know that it's like about the aftermath of Jack the Ripper and, you know, how everyone was kind of living in fear and there was no real conclusion to that case. And we actually just did a 5-part series on Jack the Ripper where I think I had like almost 80 pages of research at the end of it. It was wild.
Elena did a quick dissertation.
Yeah, just like I could not stop. It just, that case sucked me right in. And I had to ask, because I know that you are at least like mildly interested in that case.
I'm obsessed with it.
Oh, okay, I love perfect. To hear it.
Perfect.
Love to hear it.
That's exactly the answer I was hoping for. So the double event with Liz Stride and Catherine Eddowes. Do you think that was a double event? Do you think Liz was a Ripper victim, or you just think she was just lumped in there?
I am as convinced as you can be without having been there. Which obviously means that you can never know for certain, but I think everything proves, everything is pointing at that double event being an actual deed of Jack the Ripper. And the reason why that happened was that he for once chose not to do it at 4 in the morning on a normal weekday. And he did it outside his normal pattern as well, because it was very near where his mother lived. So,
oh, I didn't even know that.
He probably did it after or in some sort of conjunction with having been to his mother, because apparently because it's I do believe they know, everything points to a certain person. Because there's a general misconception when it comes to Jack the Ripper as a phenomenon and as a series of events, which is kind of mind blowing considering what we do know now about serial killers. Anyone who's like interested in serial killers and we do know a lot now about basically the general background of a person like that. And there's a lot of general reoccurring features among these predominantly male figures in a certain age of a certain social class and background and just marital status and all that. And somehow those facts have not been applied to the case of Jack the Ripper. There's been this fascination and this fixation of it being someone that was from a different social class than was predominantly in the Whitechapel area. And that defies sort of like everything that we know about how every other serial killer has ever done it. And also bear in mind that in Whitechapel at the time, if there would be like an aristocrat just waltzing in there with all clean clothes, that person would like stand out like a shining, like big,
that is very true,
throbbing, glittering thumb. So that is out of the question. Like that wouldn't happen. So it's using the razor of Occam. It's a local person.
That does make sense.
He's gonna fall into the criteria of the normal serial killer. You know, between 30 and 40, broken home background, problem with this, that, and the other, asocial. Like all of those features that for some reason they've never spoken about that. It's always some weirdo who's like well known and who had a fascination to openly do this weird thing, collect that, or you know who and basically one thing that is mind blowing about this theory. Which is presented in a book and is also presented in a documentary on BBC. If it wasn't BBC, it was one of those English channels. This is the mind-blowing bit about the theory, is that if you've seen more than one and you're interested in but one documentary or read one book about Jack the Ripper, and you, if you're somewhat interested and you know that the sequence of events somewhat, and you know the basic characters, and the character that they're pointing at is someone that we all have seen, we all know about that person, and that is the mind-boggling revelation, because all of a sudden you see him right there. And if you know about who it is, you can go back and rewatch everything that you've ever seen and read it. And now knowing that that is the person, you're just like, holy shit. That's it. That's him.
All of a sudden it fit.
Yeah. Because he was one of the persons who found one of the bodies. And the reason why it's believed that he found it was because another person came and saw him, and he was smart enough to just stood up and said, oh, I found this woman over here.
I know exactly who you're talking about.
And this other person came and just like, oh shit. Oh, is she alive?
And they were
alive?
Like, oh no, police.
We don't know. maybe we should powder up, he says, the other person that came to person one. And he says, no, we shouldn't do that. Person number two looks at the body and sees no blood, but the coat is being closed up all the way up to her shin line, basically. And then he says, we should go and find a police officer. And they both leave. Around the corner, they bump into a police officer. Person number one, who was the first body, who was standing first at the body, he says to person number two, hold on a second, I'm going to go talk to the police officer. And he went over and said, Mr. Police Officer, a colleague of yours was asking for assistance around the corner because they found a body over there. All right, said the police officer, and ran around the corner and ran towards where the body was lying. And this is the fucking magic here, is that when he sees at the other end of the street, another police officer had already found the body. So when he runs over and sees the police officer right next to the body and those other two, they have already left. He thinks nothing of it because he was tricked into believing that that police officer was already there. So the murderer had an incredible luck that he was just going to fint, like lure this police officer out of his way. But luckily, his lie turned out to be true. And that's how we escaped.
That is pretty genius.
Because when they came there,
I'm not going to lie.
Then obviously when the police officers met over the corpse or over this dead body, it was drenched in blood. So what that tells you is that at the moment when person number two comes up to person number one, there was no blood. That was because the blood was, the cut was so happened. Fresh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It just happened. Mm-hmm. And he always strangled them before he started cutting.
Yep.
Starting from, because he was a butcher. He knew perfectly well that if you're going to cut into meat, you need to stop the blood flow. Otherwise, you will have blood all over the place. So he knew perfectly well how to strangle first, and then you start maiming, because the maiming, that was not how he killed them. He did the maiming. That was part of the lust ritual. Yeah, but his name is known, and that's the guy.
See?
Must be.
It
can't
makes
be anyone
sense.
Else. They can connect him to all the murders. His mom lived down there by the double... double event, and he grew up north. He grew up south of what's it called? Whitechapel Road, like the big long one that sort of crosses like into the whole map of murders.
Yeah.
And the double event was the only thing that happened south of that street, and that's where his mother lived, and that's where he grew up.
See, that makes perfect sense. And, I didn't know that part about the mom living there. And that's after like 80 pages of research.
There's always more to learn.
Yeah, there's always more in this case.
This has been, because it's a very unsexy version of the story, because he's just a local.
Yeah.
He's just a local dude. And he works at he works as a car man. And he was handling meat. He was driving out. He had like a big, big cart with horses. And his work was in the morning, early morning hours, was to distribute meat to butchers. So he could also pass very easily in case he was dirty or had any, he was already dressed for that.
Right. That's one of the things we were pointing out, that it had to be somebody that could walk away covered in blood and nobody would blink an eye, which that's why we were saying a butcher would make sense.
Mm-hmm.
But my only thing was the anatomical knowledge of like the human body. That's the only thing that kept me from fully believing it was a butcher.
He automatically, a body, what you have to understand about bodies is how to sever, and you have to have tools. You have in simple things like knowing how to separate things from bone or bones detaching. And of course he knew that. Mm-hmm. He worked with that all day.
That is true.
Elena knows all about that.
Yeah, I'm an autopsy technician, so I think I was like super critical of the butcher theory first, because I was like, where did you know how to find like a woman's ovaries? Where, like, what?
You're like, I spent a lot of time learning that.
But it's true that it's like a very specialized, skilled thing. And there is always the thing that it could have been luck that he could find these things. It would just be hard. That's why I have trouble landing like fully on one that I believe. But that one makes sense. And I know exactly who you're talking
another, about. First name Charles.
Yep.
And another misconception in order to fully realize the story about him. If you sort of strike out the word Jack the Ripper as this sort of chapeau clock wearing aristocrat, mm-hmm. which is like the common shadow caricature of him. If you sort of look at him and you disregard the idea of the canonical five and put it rather in a context where they actually did find bodies before and also after, you also see the trajectory where the canonical five is sort of in the middle,
mm-hmm.
where even within the canonical five, it goes from pretty basic. I'm being cynical here, but you know, from a very basic stabbing to absolute
carnage.
Absolute carnage. There are a few before that are mild, and it ends up after the canonical five being body parts scattered and like a torso that was found floating in the River Thames.
Mm-hmm.
So it just paints a picture rather of this person who was a pretty classical serial killer. I think that is a very interesting story.
It really is. And it really does make sense with like the escalation. And I think you're right that people put it into this like nightmare fairy tale kind mm-hmm. of thing instead of looking at it what it was, which is just a straight up serial killer, like a terrible human being and not this like phantom in the night kind of thing.
It's not like a Grimm Brothers story.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey guys, I have to tell you about this all-in-one shake that I'm freaking loving. It's called Cachava. I love saying it. It's actually hands down the best thing that I've found to help me get all my essential nutrients into one day. Cachava is the all-in-one superfood shake made up of high-quality plant-based nutrients. It's got greens, superfruits, plant proteins, antioxidants, adaptogens, probiotics. In other words, literally everything that your body craves to feel your best. And I know what you're thinking. Something that good for me cannot possibly taste good. Wrong. That's where Cachava really earns their over 52,000 five-star reviews. It actually tastes freaking amazing. It's very creamy and smooth, and it comes together with just water. And it comes in five delicious flavors. Personally, vanilla and chai are my personal favorites, but it also comes in chocolate, matcha, and coconut acai, which I still need to try. Some people like to drink it as part of a healthy breakfast or lunch, and other people love it as a protein-packed snack before or after a workout. It's really perfect for that because it has 25 grams of plant protein per serving. Personally, I like to add mine to my overnight oats. I add a scoop and I mix it all up to get a little more protein into my oats. And literally, I can have that for breakfast and feel satiated, nourished, beautiful, functioning, all throughout my day. It's incredible. Please send me more of it because I love it so much. It makes me feel very, very good. And guess what, guys? Cachava is offering our listeners 10% off for a limited time. Just go to cachava.com/morbid, spelled K-A-C-H-A-V-A, and get 10% off your first order. That's K-A-C-H-A-V-A.com/morbid. It was almost the perfect crime. Stacks of cold, hard cash sitting on the table, unguarded. Who wouldn't be tempted to slowly reach their hand out and steal? A pile of Monopoly money from the banker. Monopoly is one of those games that can bring out our most devious selves, and Monopoly Go takes that gleeful mischievousness to your phone in a wildly popular twist on the classic that you can play anywhere, anytime. Collect rent from friends on iconic properties, bankrupt them by pulling a heist on their vault, even use a wrecking ball to shut down their monuments. And Monopoly Go has timed tournaments where you can team up with friends to unlock big prizes and try to top the leaderboards. Whether you're helping out your friends or going head-to-head for riches, Monopoly Go is an absolute blast. Go download it now free on the App Store or Google Play.
But, so you don't believe that it's the Aaron Kosminski who they found the DNA,
nope,
quote unquote, because I don't either.
Nope.
And I'm really glad
too
that you don't.
Fetched.
I'm really glad you don't. Yeah, the mitochondrial DNA. Well,
I am as certain as I can be. Like, I am as certain as I can be. Because
I gotta look into him more now.
I've seen enough various stories and representations and documentaries and run-throughs of this whole story, and I've seen enough mass murderers, serial killers, and read about them to understand, to see the connection and see the simplicity. It's usually not as complex. You don't,
very
don't
true,
walk over the stream to find water. It's usually not
exactly
that hard. And all the other stories are just complicated. Mm-hmm. And most of them are stories, as I said, that where the accusation of guilt is thrown from one social class to another. And it's usually from the lower up.
Very true.
And I don't think that there's a coincidence that many of them are either royal or Jews or this, that, or the others. The people that would, especially back then, people would love to see guilty, mm-hmm, of something.
Like a Absolutely. Scapegoat kind of situation.
Oh yeah, there was so much of that in this case. I could go like, yes, on and on with like Sir Charles Warren. I could go on and on. We could be here for like 4 hours, I wish. But thank you so much for answering those questions, because I really wanted to know your opinion on this. And now I'm going to look further into Charles, because we mentioned him and we talked about him, but I didn't go too far into him. And now I'm like, huh.
A little further.
Because I'd like to be convinced, and that sounds pretty convincing. So we decided to put together rapid fire ghost questions, but not Ghost the Band, like paranormal ghosts. Because we figured we wanted to get, you know, a different side of things.
Yeah.
Cool.
Awesome.
Sweet.
So number one, are you afraid of ghosts?
I have always been afraid of the dark.
Same.
And so, yeah, I guess so. I try to rationalize. I have this mind game where I think of if I were a serial killer, you know, if I'd just been dropped one more time, you know, head first on the floor, I could have been one. And if I were, theoretically, I could be.
It's true.
What would the odds be that I would run into some other fucking lunatic here?
That's true.
And so forth. And I like the idea of this friendly sort of ghost that you can sort of be friends with. Awesome. But regardless how much I try to theoreticize and I it never really works that way. It always my imagination always screws with me. But that's why I try to avoid being, I would never be alone in like a house or something like that. We live in the park, so.
I couldn't do it. Yeah, I'm the same way. I don't like the dark either. And like, I have to sleep with a light on and like sound, because I can't handle like silence and quiet and darkness. But No. I think with ghosts, it's the spontaneity of ghosts that I don't like. Like, I don't even know if I'm scared of ghosts. I just don't like that they don't plan or warn me when they come.
They don't announce their presence.
Yeah, I don't want to be surprised by anything. And, like, they always surprise you. So, yeah, I'm going to say no. I'm afraid of ghosts.
I would love for that sort of gentle knock before.
Yeah.
Yeah, just hello. A little bit.
A little you something.
Know. Hello, yeah, I'm coming. Little,
yeah.
And then you can exactly. make a decision.
Sorry, please.
Oh, no, you're fine.
Then it's a yes or no. I answer the door or I don't. I can say no, not right now.
Yeah, you have an option in this scenario. Exactly. I agree with that. I think I'm really just scared of, like, the very scary ghosts, like poltergeists that want to mess with you and can come through your electronics. I'm not really into that. But in our childhood home, Elena and I grew up in the same house. And we've mentioned it before in episodes. We had tons of ghosts in that home and so many paranormal experiences. And in a weird way, some of the experiences made me feel protected. Mm. Like, there was somebody, if I was home alone and I did, like, there, we've said it before, there would be like a perfume waft that would go by you. And you would just feel this overwhelming sense of calm.
Mm-hmm.
So those ghosts I'm cool with.
But yeah.
The menacing ones I don't like.
I would say number two, are you a Casper, Patrick Swayze, or Beetlejuice guy? If you had to choose.
There's a reason for me to dress myself and behave like more like a Beetlejuice guy on stage. Probably a little bit more Swayze, I guess. I don't know, actually.
I love that.
I don't have a fun answer on that one.
No, that was a great answer.
But there's a reason that that I'm flipping between personalities.
That makes sense.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
Yeah.
What about you?
Beetlejuice.
You're Beetlejuice.
All the way.
Explanation, just yeah, I'm just Beetlejuice.
Beetlejuice.
Okay, I'm Casper all the way because I'd like to think of myself as friendly.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Perfect.
Well, the thing, I'm just going to cut in here and just
say.
No,
go ahead. Sure.
One thing that I've always had very, very vivid dreams.
Me too.
And still, as a grown-up, even though I don't understand that I'm dreaming and always, but if I understand that I dream, when I was a kid, I could fly all the time, but still, if as long as I know it's a dream, I can fly in the dream.
Mm-hmm. That's so cool.
And another thing that I've learned in the dream, which is actually quite handy when it comes to scary things, is always to attack. You always attack whatever you see in the dream that is threatening. Even though it might sort of go against your intuition, you just have to remind yourself, like, hit first, just fucking, you know, attack.
Go first, for the throat. Ask questions immediately. Later.
Yeah, apologize later.
Yeah, as soon as you see a scary, like, stairway or something that's dark, just run up, right, run down it, just jump down, and that usually shifts the dream, just like whoop,
and
all of a sudden it's under control.
It does.
You take the power.
Because usually when I can realize that it's a dream, I'm going to try that next time because I can lucid dream a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And usually I'll realize it's a dream and something terrible is about to happen and I get annoyed. Like, my first thought is like, ugh. Like, I get super annoyed and I just, like, run the other way.
See, I can switch dreams when I'm dreaming. Mm-hmm. Like, I can go somewhere else and turn it into a different
dream. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Damn, I want to try all this stuff.
I'm just like, I don't like that scenario. I'm going to go over here.
You guys are getting stuff done in your dreams. I'm just like,
warriors.
This is annoying. I'm going to run the other way. So what would be your favorite type of ghost? Like a poltergeist, Victorian child, a chic ghost, an angry bride?
Or something we haven't mentioned.
Yeah.
I guess it would be a Victorian child.
I knew you were going to say that for some reason.
I don't know if we're sort of touching this subject later, but just generally, I am very dismissive of most horror films made last 25 years. But one group or one genre or one production house, if you want to be that sort of specific, that I really did enjoy was basically most of the film that Guillermo del Toro sort of touched.
I love him. He's one of my favorites.
Just because he always, and I don't know if he, but I guess that sort of started a little bit with the Japanese films, where at the end, you know, after all these horrible things happen, there was always like a big excuse at the end. No, this it was actually this deed made the kid do that. This happened to the kid. So all these murders are okay. And then it's like validated. A beautiful ending. Yeah, they're all validated because actually the person that was most the poorest was this one. So, and so a lot of the things that he has done, you know, Hero and Orfanato and a lot of those, I love those sort of when there's like a conclusion and that you feel like, wow, that was, and it's tragic but beautiful at the same time. And but they break my heart as a parent as well. I can't see them. I can never see them again. I always see them once and then I never see them again.
I feel
But so I'd probably prefer one of those. If I'm going to have something around, it needs to be like someone like that, or like an older woman or something like, but I would love for it to be some kind of a, I don't like screaming, and I have a problem with people who are like twitchy. I don't like twitchy people at all because I'm a control freak. I like people who are like subdued.
That's Elena. Yep.
Yeah, so it needs to be one of those. But Victorian, I like that. And if you dress properly as well, I like that.
There you go.
I like that.
I'm taking it to a full blown place of chaos because of who I am as a human, and I would want an angry bride.
Yeah,
kind of
you
haunt.
Would.
I love a good angry bride.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And just I'm cool with like yelling and
screaming
loudness.
Bride.
Yeah, just let it all out.
Yeah.
And weirdly, growing up, there was like a 3-year stint where I was a dead bride for Halloween, 3 years in a row. There's probably some psychology behind that.
I'm sure there is.
So I felt like I had to choose angry bride.
You're manifesting that, I think, in some way. I think, you know what, I would want a Victorian person. I don't know if I'd want a child because I think it would just make me cry. But I think an older Victorian woman.
There you go.
I could get down with.
You have a lot of kids to take care of already.
I do. So I feel like it's, you know, and I would just cry and I don't want to cry. Also, Pan's Labyrinth and Devil's Backbone are like two of my favorite movies. Just had to throw that out there. But the next question would be, when you become a ghost, are you going to be a sheet ghost? Are you going to be a quilt ghost, a fancy lace curtain ghost, checkered tablecloth ghost?
What kind of ghost
are you going to wear? Like, are you going to wear a sheet, a blanket?
When you said sheet ghost, I came to think about the Grudge.
Ooh.
You know, the ghost that sort of appears in between the sheets.
Yep.
And, you know, even though in between the sheets is a good position to be in. But it's a funny, if you're the ghoster, I would assume that it's a very effective way of terrifying people.
I don't think so. There you go.
But I guess I more realistically would be sort of ponderer that would walk around aimlessly and amongst, you know, the old the stuff. Kind of like, imagine like a ghost version of Citizen Kane in the end.
Ooh.
You know, because I'm a collector, so I have a lot, like, I like to collect a lot of stuff. And I'm sure I sort of end up with roaming around all that stuff.
Just with all your stuff. Oh, no, you just made me rethink this now. Because I also collect a lot of stuff.
That's
and now I'm like,
very true.
Oh, no, I didn't even think of that I'm just going to be roaming around my... I guess that's fine, though. I'll just be roaming around in my stuff. You know what? You made me feel better about it.
It's all stuff that you love. Why would you not want to roam around in it for eternity?
Yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah.
And other people's
stuff. And if my stuff is lost, then I'm going to be that cheat ghost.
Exactly. Because then you'll be pissed.
Yep. There you go. See, I would want to be like a sheet ghost, but I think I would end up being like a furry blanket ghost because that's just like how I live.
Because you like to be comfy.
I just always am in a furry blanket.
I want to be a fancy lace ghost because I'm not that fancy currently in like real life. So I in the afterlife, I want to be a little more fancy.
I think you're pretty fancy. I think that's
I mean,
that's
I'm wearing correct. Johnny Cupcake sweatpants right now, so I appreciate that.
You know, it's all relative. It's fine. Next question is Ouija boards. Are you for or against them? Because people have very serious thoughts about them.
I am probably an against person.
Yes, me too.
I find them to be irritably fake.
That is true.
So
we're against them for different reasons.
And you know, I split my brain in two, very much when it comes to belief and knowledge and humility in front of the fact that I don't know everything. But you know, as much as I do believe in that there is a great universe that we don't understand, I'm also pragmatical enough to shoot down anyone who says that they understand, because that is bullshit, because mm-hmm. you don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm all open for paranormal activity. But I also know that you who wrote a bullshit book about it don't know shit. So and Ouija boards is, I think it's a well-established fact, also being one that I've tried it, that there's always someone fucking moving that little cup around.
It's very true. That's so. What I straddle the line. Like, I don't really care either mm-hmm. way. Like, I'm not super against them, and I'm not like, yes, Ouija boards. But I kind of feel the same way, that I'm like, I don't know if anything bad would happen. Because everyone I've ever done, like, I've done them growing up, and someone was always moving that thing. So I've never had an experience that was like, a ghost came through and we were followed for 10 years and don't ever touch it. So I'm just kind of like, all right, if you want to do it, you want to do it.
Yeah. For me, I told Elena,
no.
I think I should be exempt from this question because I'm very against personal use of them. I've had friends in the past, and kind of like what you were saying, Tobias, I feel like there's a lot out there that we don't know about.
Mm-hmm.
And there could be very easy ways to open those channels, and we don't know how to close them. So I'm all set with that.
Are you the kind of person who loves a touch-up on the go, or maybe you're a full glam while in the carpool kind of human? Maybe there's no time for a full face in the morning between kids, pets, work, all of that. Maybe you woke up late. Well, Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation is perfect for those moments when life moves fast. I absolutely love this foundation because it doesn't settle into any fine lines or wrinkles, and you can just toss this thing in your purse. You say, oh my gosh, I have a little smudge right here. Let me fix it really quick. It's perfect. And it's now in 16 shades. It offers SPF 20, which, like, that's amazing. It's got moisturizing pro vitamin B5. And I love the applicator. It's a blurring sponge. So you can just tap, tap, tap it to reset your foundation and you are good. Shop Maybelline's new Instant Age Rewind Eraser Foundation at amazon.com/instant-eraser-foundation. Shout out to Astapro for sponsoring this episode and providing us with free samples. Guys, I am obsessed with Astapro, and you should be too, because seasonal allergies are a freaking bummer. They make me feel like crud, they make me sneeze, they make my boogies all yucca, and it's just really kind of gross. But Astapro is a first-of-its-kind nasal allergy spray. It is the fastest 24-hour over-the-counter OTC allergy spray. It starts working in 30 minutes, while other allergy sprays take hours. Astapro is the first and only 24-hour steroid-free allergy spray. Astapro delivers full prescription-strength indoor and outdoor allergy relief from nasal congestion, runny and itchy nose, and sneezing. Have you tried Astapro, Elena? Because I'm obsessed.
I have, and it's so fast!
It's so fast! Astapro. It's faster, bro. Get fast-acting nasal allergy symptom relief with Astapro. Go to astaproallergy.com for a discount so you can Astapro and go today. Astepro allergy.com. It's faster, bro. Use as directed for relief of nasal congestion, runny nose, sneezing, and itchy nose due to allergies.
Bloody Mary, mm-hmm. What version did you grow up hearing about or playing?
I think that Bloody Mary is, when I hear that, I think about a drink. But
one of my favorite drinks.
We had, what was it called? I think that the most commonly similar game was called Svarta Madame.
Ooh.
Which is the Black Madam. Ooh, I think ooh. That was similar. So I can't really, I don't know exactly what Bloody Mary the game is. How do you play that?
It's different for everybody.
It is.
We grew up playing a similar version, but yours varies a bit.
Yeah.
So it usually starts off with you have a mirror in front of you and you're
usually
in the dark.
In the bathroom.
Usually in the, we were okay. Always supposed to be in the bathroom and you say her name a certain amount of times in the mirror.
Okay, it's exactly like Svarta Madame.
Oh, okay, cool. Yours just has a way cooler name.
I was going to say it sounds way cooler, but we also had this weird little like modified version that now, especially as an adult, I'm like, wow, that's rude. Because you were supposed to stand there and say the Bloody Mary however many times, and then you were supposed to say, I have your baby.
That's real weird.
Which now as an adult, I'm like, I would come scratch you out of a mirror too if I were her. Like, are you kidding me? And I don't remember what the whole thing behind that was. It was like this witch who got her baby stolen and you were supposed to be like, I have your baby, and then be upset when she comes through the mirror.
That's wild.
But yeah, I never really did it. I was too scared to do it.
I remember doing Bloody Mary once and being so terrified. I shrieked downstairs through like my whole entire house and I got in so much trouble.
I love that. Yours definitely sounds way better though, Tobias. I'm not going to lie.
For sure.
Just for the name alone.
Yeah, it's a catchy name.
It is. So the last one I'll ask in these ones so we can get to the listener questions. If you had to have a famous person's ghost haunt your house, who would you choose?
Ooh. Good question. I mean, I'm generally a laughing person, and it would help. It would be practical if it was someone who's kind of funny.
Yeah.
But the sad thing that is that a lot of comedians aren't necessarily very funny when they're private.
That's very true.
So, someone who's cracking jokes all the time, that would be nice. I don't know, Richard Pryor, maybe.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah, there you go.
Someone like that.
Or like Robin Williams.
You know, someone that, you know, I can sort of loosely sort of joke with all the time.
That's a good answer.
And, so it helps. I mean, in our home, I'm very sort of, I just make noises and jokes and try to, I always try to, I don't know how to explain my behavior, but it's very, and just because I'm hanging out with my wife, who's kind of similar, and our kids who are now like, you know, we're all sort of the same size nowadays. And so it's like four people at home
that must be
who
so
all
weird.
Sort of behave the same in a similar way, where there's sort of trigger words that just unleashes this sort of series of words that sort of echo throughout the apartment.
I'm a little bit like that.
It's just swear words and certain if someone sort of says a certain word, I have to echo that.
Yeah.
And obviously now I'm just scratching at the surface of like a whole slew of internal jokes, but anyone who's going to haunt our house needs to be in on that. Otherwise,
they need to hang.
It might be weird. Yeah.
Or else they won't fit
and
in.
You need
I
to
love
contribute
that.
With your own stuff as well.
Yeah. You
so
gotta
you can't
go.
Just sit here and feed off of, of our jokes. You have to contribute.
Yeah, be original, okay?
It's not a free show here. You have to contribute.
Exactly.
I love that.
Who would yours be, Alina?
I would say David Bowie. Just one, so I could look at David Bowie. And two, his outfits are great. So I feel like they would always just, yeah, and it would always like cheer me up. He can sing to me. He can pretend to be Jareth from the Labyrinth. I would make him do that daily.
He's a multifaceted character.
Yeah. I think it would be great.
That's a good choice.
Kind of hoping it happens, actually. I'm hoping I'm just manifesting it as I'm talking about it.
We can summon him later.
Yeah.
I would say mine would have to be Tom Petty, like for similar reasons to you. He could sing to me.
There
you
go.
Play guitar. He's also friends with very cool people who would like come hang out with us.
Oh, that's a good point.
When Stevie Nicks crosses over, God forbid, someday, she could come over. We could have a lot of fun. It'd be great.
I think it sounds great. I think we all nailed that one. Guys, also my husband sings 90s R&B ballads all the time, so our house is very similar. So I think we'll end on the listener questions just so we can make sure we get some of those in.
Definitely.
Because people are very excited to hear you answer their questions.
Okay.
So the first one comes from Rachel and Justin, and they want to know, when will we ever see the quote-unquote film project briefly mentioned a couple of years ago, or do a horror horror film project in general?
let's just say that any horror film and another film project is not necessarily the same. There are several ideas, and one or several might come to fruition within a few years.
Ooh. Sweet. That was a great answer. That. All right. Our next question comes from Anita McCormick and also myself, because I'm a cat person. We want to know how many cats you have.
I have no cats, unfortunately.
No cats.
I wish I had. No, I am very, very, very much a cat person. I love cats. But one problem is that my daughter is allergic to them.
Oh.
That's not great.
And, that's not great.
Which, you know, we can circumvent that by, you know, there are certain cats that doesn't have that dandruff situation. But on the other hand, it's also like a very, it will prohibit a little bit of our lifestyle.
I could see that.
Because we don't live in a house, so they can't be out. So you have to have them inside. And currently, I think we all feel that one day, if we ever live in a penthouse that's big enough to sort of roam around, because you won't have two cats, well, you want them to have like a friend,
and yep.
It needs to be big enough for them to roam around. And so we don't have that yet.
Yes. Well, I hope you get it someday. And you could get one of those, like a Sphinx cat, the naked cats.
Yeah, exactly.
There you go.
Yeah. No, I'd love that as well. I mean, I like those cats as well. So it's like, I love cats. I had a cat when I was little. So I miss, I don't miss him. He was a crazy cat. he scratched my face. And unfortunately, after that, he attacked me. And then unfortunately, they put him to rest.
Was
very sad. I didn't want that to happen, but he was a crazy cat.
Traumatizing.
When, you know, he was attacking everyone. Yeah.
Can't have
not
that.
Cool. No, it wasn't traumatizing to me. It was like, because I love the cat. So I was like, no.
I feel like it's fine. You know, scratch me again.
He didn't mean it. Yeah, he didn't mean it.
The aftermath is traumatizing.
Yeah.
I would say.
Yeah.
We have three, or I have three very chill cats. So I've recently become a cat person.
And I am a dog person, but I won't let that stand in the way of our friendship, Tobias. We'll get through it together. I've been okay with Ash's cats, but
my cats love you.
They do. We get along. So maybe, but I'm a dog person. But the next question is from Audrey, and she says, outside of Elizabeth Bowtry and Jack the Ripper, is there any ghost song, or will there be any future ghost song with inspiration from true crime?
Possibly. I can't promise anything, but why not? I have many records to write, so
I'd love to hear
sooner
that.
Or later as well. Through some
when the inspiration comes.
Yeah, no, you have to promise right now. We need it in writing.
Okay.
He'll send that later, guys.
Cool, thanks.
Our next one question comes from Shay Q, and they say, Tobias, I'm wondering if in light of the religious and mythology-related subjects, you have a similar experience of choosing to walk away from an organized religion that no longer served you, or if it's more of an outside observation.
Somewhere in between. As I said, I grew up in a very liberal home where religion had no place. More so than from a cultural aspect, like a pop cultural aspect. It was part of, we were high consumers of TV, radio, films, music. So the concept and art, my mother worked, with art. The concept of religion was ever represented in film and art and music. So I already knew for as long as I can remember, I was fascinated by the idea of the history. And of course, as any kid, you start asking yourself about God and anything beyond the realm of what you can fathom. But I think that there were a few things that sort of outside my home that really colored my stance on as to how I felt about religion as a more of an organized social exercise. One of them was my first teacher. That I had grade 1 and 2. She was a very mean, like disciplinarian, woman. And, this was the '80s and she was probably just about to throw her towel in at that point. I mean, she must have, I think she retired like a year after, us or something like that. She was very old for us, obviously being like, if she was 65 in mid 80s, later 80s, she was very old school. And I remember her telling, I don't know if she told the whole group, but I think I remember, or at least I was in the room when she told me, or she looked at my direction and say that, we're not allowed to hit the children anymore. But if I could, I would.
Oh my god!
Stuff like that.
She's just very upfront.
So she. Oof. Oh yeah, yeah, and she did not like me at all. She was very upset with just because I was never very good at school, and I've always been kind of anti-authority.
Same.
But. And I was foul-mouthed. I was swearing a lot. And so, I have no problem looking back and seeing, like, I probably provoked her a lot. But my memory of her, because she, from what I recall, and if any one of my old school friends ever hear this and they say, like, no, that's not true. Maybe it wasn't. But my memory of it was that she was implementing an abnormal amount of biblical theory and biblical class. Ooh. On us. And she was also very righteous and she combined her religious belief with meanness and very condescending. And she was very angry all the time. I remember I did a double knot on my shoes. So I went in and asked if she could help me untie it. And she was just like, oh, give me that.
Oh my God.
And just like, you just get a yelling for anything you do. And
you're like,
and,
I'm 8.
And my relationship with her was combined with several others that was religious people who mm-hmm. were actually kind of mean. So I got the impression that this is just bullshit. This is bullshit. I can separate. And I think, for as long as I can remember, I can separate the history lesson of the Bible. Yeah, there was this dude born 2,000 years ago that had ideas, and he started this little cult, and then he got trashed for it. That's not hard to understand.
Nope.
And yeah, because that doesn't really fit into our story, you know, so we had to sort of curate it a little. And, you know, so a lot of those thought processes started for me very early, especially as soon as I, you know, when I sort of became a Satanist, if it was not on the day, but it was pretty much exactly coinciding with my adolescence. So that became a very powerful tool to oppose anything that I found stupid or weak or hypocritical. And I still think it is. I look at many of the most vocal religious people in your media climate or whatever, or around you, that are claiming righteous thoughts about what to do with female bodies or whatever it is. And it's all stems from evil ignorance and just pure low life dumbassness.
Yep. Wow. Do you want to come on the show every week?
I know.
And yeah, I still find it as provoking and as much, you know, as when I was a child. And it makes me just want to scream and rock.
Scream and rock.
Play loud, like obnoxious rock music.
It seems to be like a lot of people's experience when they like take themselves away from religion is they see people who are not practicing what they preach. Mm-hmm. Like it's the exact opposite, because it's supposed to be like preaching kindness and goodness, and that's all great. And it's like, awesome.
And you can do that outside.
Like love thy neighbor and all that. And it's like, all right, cool. That sounds great. But then you meet like someone like your teacher and you're like, how though? Like, how does this correlate?
You're not like, practicing what you preach. Just help me untie my shoe, please.
Yeah. Well, I think it's, you know, if you want to be the more sober person in the room and just look at it, you understand that there are other aspects usually rooted in the reason why people utilize religion as a life code, mm-hmm. that more than often sort of subject others to grief and torment.
Exactly.
And but again, yeah, like how much of a slack do you want to give people? Mm-hmm. You can't just look at anyone and just like, oh man, you know, if he or she was just a little bit happier,
yep.
he or she will understand that. That is a bad, bad judiciary move.
So true.
You know, it doesn't, you can't, some people are just fucking dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot say that of again. People should be put out of our misery. But all I can do is rock.
That's all we ask.
And that's my lot in life. And I am very lucky with my lot. So
we're happy you found your lot in life.
I know. Thank you for answering that.
Dive into the chilling new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, the riveting adaptation of the best-selling true crime book. Based on shocking true events, Under the Bridge tells the haunting story of a murder that lays bare a small community's darkest secrets. Go deep into the hidden world of the town's tormented teenagers as detectives race to solve the sinister crime. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge premieres April 17th, streaming only on Hulu.
The next one that I'm going to ask you is from Saima, and she says, growing up in Sweden, what was the scariest urban legend or story you were told as a child? And does horror as a genre differ in Scandinavia versus the United States? So it's like a two-parter.
I think a lot of folklore and is similar, just because we you know, Sweden is a very, what would be the word? rural. It's very naturesque. A lot of forest, creeks, valleys, you know, rivers. So, and we have a lot of, since it's an old country as well, you have to remember that, you know, it's been a functioning, somewhat functioning country for almost 1,000 years. So it's, it had a lot of old tradition of, trolls and a lot of various forest beings and, different weird characters that live near the stream and underneath the waterfall. And it's a lot of folklore that is based on nature and, you know, the nocturnal side of the forest. And I found many of them to be equally fascinating as terrifying. I mean, especially if you look from a a historic perspective, which I always like that. I mean, I'm very interested in history, but also trying to understand the psyche of people historically. And you have to realize that people, not very long ago, as much as, you know, there's plenty of simpletonery nowadays, there was obviously the standard mindset hundreds of years ago were pretty uninformed, and it must have been a terrifying environment to live in. Not only, you know, just 100 years ago, you could kill people left, right, and center. If you had more than one brain cell, you could get away with killing people so easy, just because the forensics was not up to snuff.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm.
So on the one hand, you had the real life that was just filled with bandits, murderers, and rapists that would come and rape your wife and kill your children and rob you and. But on the other hand, you know, as soon as you sort of veered away from society, you had the very, very threatening forest outside your door as well, with trolls and vets and all kinds of things.
Fairies.
Haunting you.
Fairies are scary.
Yeah. And, oh, let alone the wrath of God, you know.
Oh, yeah, and that.
There's always that.
Always that.
Yes. So, yeah, horrible times. But, you know,
good times.
They all lived through it for us to sit here.
That's
which,
true.
You know, I did what most people, or most people, but a lot of people have done in the last couple of years. And I did the whole ancestry thing and, you know, built my family tree. And I just found it to be, very, I got very touched when you see all these people who's lived their lives and, you know, tried to survive and through hundreds of years, throughout wars and all kinds of famine and all these things, just to survive and sort of try to get a little bit ahead and for the next generation to do a little bit better. And, you know, that sort of put me in a mindset that it's, you know, you're just one part of this tree that will continue growing, hopefully. And I mean, just because my branch, if for some reason, if that would end, the branch, it has so many branches. That's also like a mind blowing thing where you're doing that. I have relatives like all over the world, like in America, tons, so many, just because there was a great migration, wave in Sweden in the late or mid to late 1800s. And that, you know, it puts you you sort of see a little bit of a, you understand that you're just one part and your job is to just push it forward and do the best you can do in order to just make it a little bit better for the future. but you're out eventually.
That's a good way
but
of
you're doing it for
it,
all
though.
These people because yeah. otherwise well, they would have done this for nothing. Not
there
for
you go.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Because they obviously did it for their future, but yeah, I think that is important to understand that you're just a part of a flow.
Yeah.
I love
that's
that.
The perfect way of looking at that.
It's like I forget where I heard it, but it's like your legacy is like planting a garden that you don't get to see.
Yeah.
You just leave it for everybody else.
Mm-hmm. And to circle back on supernatural things, where it originated was that all of these people lived through not only wars and horrors, but also all these fucking threats of this, that, or the other, of the wolf coming eating your kid, and then the bears and the boars and all the weird things that we have in our forest that actually does exist.
Right.
Yeah.
I love that. Swedish forests, man.
I think they must be so beautiful.
I think we might have done an episode where we mentioned one. I don't remember now. I'll have to look at it. There's some scary ones.
There are, for sure. But I'm happy that you touched on history because it actually leads into the next question. Scarlet A says, can you please ask St. Tobias, patron saint of rats, if he was able to have dinner with any historical figure, who would that be?
just because we mentioned him a moment ago, I would probably, I'm going to out his name here, but I would love to have a dinner with Charles Lechner.
There you go.
That would be very interesting.
It would.
You get a lot of answers to a lot of questions.
Yeah, and you know what? I would like you to have dinner with him because now I want to know.
And you can report back.
Yeah, I'm high and worsenly just assuming that he will confess, but.
What has he got to lose at this point? You know?
Exactly.
Just do it. That's all you have to say to him. Like, what do you have to lose?
Yeah, you're dead. Yeah.
You're good. I won't tell anyone. Just whisper it.
But, you know, if I could curate this meal, it would probably be in the 20s because he died in 1921.
Ooh.
So you'd want to catch him, you know, not maybe 1921, but, you know, when he's definitely think he's in the clear, you know,
right.
in 1910s or something like that. Maybe in April 1912, and you can, you know, directly after the sinking of the Titanic, and you sort of talk about that first, and then lure him into. Yeah.
I like that. You gain his trust first.
Yeah, you get a little segue in there.
And commiserate over the sadness of the Titanic.
Right.
And you're like, speaking of sadness.
How about
murder a bunch of
people?
It's pretty sad. I like that. I think it would work. So the next question we have is from Bianca. And Bianca says, I hope you're doing well and staying safe. As the spooky season is upon us, Halloween traditions and rituals help keep the spirit alive. This is beautifully written. My go-to is watching horror movies all month long with the lights dimmed or by candlelight, then dressing up scary and passing out candy. Do you have any particular way you celebrate for the month or any horror movies that are your go-to?
Not really.
You just hang. It's spooky season all year.
That's how we are.
No, yeah. You'd think. yeah, that's funny. I mean, I've heard myself saying like, when someone was inviting us to some, you know, you go to a masquerade, I'm like, I don't know, I'm
you're
not
like,
good.
Well.
I don't have a lot of costumes. Like, I don't. And I don't dress up normally. I'm a very, very big fan of Halloween. I'm a very big fan of, I mean, as the season and the holiday. What do you call it? In Sweden we have a school break just around that time.
Oh, cool.
Oh, lucky.
And obviously in Sweden, also being a sort of a taiga forest country, you know, and on the northern hemisphere, also for us, Halloween is obviously very, very autumnal.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just a very, very cozy.
Yes.
Cozy is the word. It's a very cozy part of the year. Point of time in the year, but the thing is that you have to remember is that in Sweden we did not celebrate Halloween before. That was a commercial. It was a commercial amendment that I would say, maybe with the odd exception of of some theme party at some point and before that. But it was basically people, I think, our age that started doing it in the late 90s, mid to late 90s.
That's wild.
More as a tribute to, you know, what we've seen on the films. And back then, you couldn't, like, buy Halloween stuff that way. We have a similar day there. It's all it's also in honors of the dead, the same as that Dia de los Muertos, and it's also like on the 2nd of November or 1st of November or something like that.
Is it All Hallows Eve?
Yeah, but the whole practice of Halloween with pumpkins and all that stuff, you had to like do everything. In the 90s, you had to sort of create all the things. And so it became very, and nowadays, you know, there's this whole package. You can just go buy everything. And it's almost as a commercial holiday as it is here in America.
Oh, wow.
Which I like. I like it. So I'm all for it. But therefore, there's no real rooted tradition. We don't have like a culinary tradition. There's not a tradition rooted in our upbringing or anything. So I think that we're still feeling it out.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But we have friends who one thing that we do is we have a friend of the family is long story short, he owns an amusement parks, and we usually on Halloween, we go together with him and his family, we go down to one of the amusement parks, which is a zoo out in the forest.
Ooh.
And then, you know, a park full with animals and stuff. And they usually decorate it Halloween-like, and you go through the park. So that's a nice sort of autumnal tradition. And then we, you know, stay at the hotel there, which is right in the wilderness. And so that's nice.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
I was going to say, that's spooky. I like that.
Kind of like similar to what we have with the, what is it called?
The Jack-O-Lantern Spectacular.
Thank you.
We have something similar, not as cool as that because it's not like in the wilderness, but it's at a zoo. And so it's at night. So all the animals are around and they have like thousands of carved pumpkins that they light up.
And they'll hang them and
everything.
Yeah, and
it's just this like huge labyrinth that you go through. So we do that every year too. So that's pretty similar.
Mm.
But it's like, if you don't have it when you grow up, like you were saying, I didn't think of that like if it's not ingrained in you from like a very young age, it would be like, yeah, I don't, like we don't have traditions that
right.
we do because we didn't start with it. I didn't even think of that because I'm just like Halloween from birth.
No, but on the other hand, the trick or treat thing is very similar to what we do on Easter.
Oh,
so
that's interesting.
Yeah. So when you're a kid around Easter, on Easter, that was when you went around asking for candy.
Oh,
that makes a little more sense, actually.
Yeah, we just have a bunny come and give it to us.
Yeah, which he like breaks into your home and just leaves you candy.
Yeah, we just have a home invasion.
Well, that bunny is not real. So
no,
no, there is this.
You just,
no, I'm just
you
saying
shattered
that,
the glass.
We've just sort of shuffled around the traditions, I guess.
That makes sense.
But yeah, but I'm a big fan of Halloween. I like that. Good commercial holiday. Very cozy.
I agree.
Yeah.
Pumpkins for life.
Pumpkins forever. Well, our next question comes from Francis. And they said, if I could ask Mr. Forge a question, it would simply be, what makes you happy?
There are many things that make me happy. And I like when one of the best feelings I can ever have is be with my family and there's no have to's. When I'm done working, there's not a whole lot of stuff that I need to do. That is one of the weird things about, you know, getting what you wish for, because you spend so much time not being a professional at what you do, wishing to be a professional, thinking somehow that if I just get to not have a job, I can just do my passion, my hobby, and then you sort of reach some sort of new platform, some sort of status quo when you're, all of your problems is sort of out the window. And where I've noticed that, like, my working situation, because I do have a job, even though I don't feel necessarily like I have a job in the classic sense, I work all the time and I have a very hard time not working. My brain is constantly just spinning. And there are moments when I can stop doing that. And that is a very nice feeling. But that's usually when you let yourself, okay, so tonight I'm with my family. Tonight I'm with my family and my friends. I'm going to have a GT and I'm just going to let it flow.
You know, I feel that
and knowing that you're not going to go up in the morning, you have nothing. There's nothing but a day in front of the TV tomorrow with no have to's. Oh, that's a nice.
That is happiness.
Thing. You just spoke like into our souls. I think that's exactly what makes us happy as well. Yeah,
that was like perfect.
Should we do one more question?
Yeah, why don't we do, what are your favorite guilty pleasure songs? And that's from Marissa.
I don't feel too ashamed of music that I liked, but it's, of course I have a different, I'm, you know, on one hand, I'm a nerdy collector, aficionado about certain things and certain bands, certain styles, you know, where I collect everything I see, know everything about it, or try to get to know everything about a certain band and anybody who's been in that band and any demo that they've ever made and what different versions, what differentiates the first version of the demo with the second, yeah, because they changed the address, all that stuff. Whereas I also like a lot of songs by artists that I don't give a rat's ass about who they are or what their background is. It's just a great song. I've always been very, very song driven ever since, for as long as I can remember. As I said, the TV was on, the radio was on, we listened to music. My brother had one set of records that he listened to, my mom and myself, and it was just a constant flow of music. So, therefore I've never really shunned away. And then obviously it can be a band or something that you'd like, I don't necessarily like the totality of their thing, but you know, this song is really good because of this little transition over here or that. That's pretty brilliant. I have a faiblesse, a weakness for early 90s Euro disco.
Wow, I love that. I didn't see that coming.
I love how specific that is.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's someone who really is really in the know might argue that it started before, but I think that's generally between 1990, 1991 to 1994. And that's the cutoff date, basically. There are a few songs that came in after that, around 96, 97, that's okay. But not only was it a very creative, there was a lot of new technology that they used, a lot of new synths, and a lot of that I just liked the sound of. But there was a lot of great songwriting in that. That was powerful songs. And I think it also coincided with, you know, that was the age I was when, you know, I was adolescent. And before you'd seen the loop, you know, and before you'd really started exploring what it's like being a teenager and all the heartache that brings with it, you know, being a 12-year-old walking through the city and at night on my way home with a friend, having been to the you know, the equivalent of Blockbusters, and we had a bunch of films, and then you went by the nightclub. You know, we all sort of lived in the city, so it was a very, we like the nightlife was very near us, near around us. And yeah, you saw like cute 18-year-old girls, and you heard the music from inside, and it just sounded appealing when you heard what is love and stuff like that. So I associate that with nightlife, the dangerous, very enticing nightlife that you could only watch from an outside point of view when you hadn't really explored anything of it for real. So therefore I am very fascinated with Eurodisco between 1991 and 1994.
That's incredible.
There you go.
So you like a feeling associated with a song? Like you like when you can bring some nostalgia with it?
I don't know if I like it, but that I like the feeling of it, but I have to control it as well, because I can get stuck in feelings. Mm-hmm. And then I need to break it by listen to something else and just sort of take my head out of that, because it opens. I have, as much as I'm a very imaginary or imaginative, what's the word? How do you say that? I have a lot of imagination.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah.
It also plays tricks on me. So I don't want to say a good memory, because I don't necessarily remember details, and I maybe not, especially because you didn't, hadn't reached a certain maturity level, so you couldn't really handle what you saw. So I might, my recollection might not be correct of what I saw or what happened of something, but I have a very, very vast memory bank of almost my entire life. I can remember things pretty clearly from two probably. Wow. And onwards.
That's wild.
And ever since I asked my mother once, like, what year is it? From that date, I also know pretty much which year something happened, or which month.
Oh, wow.
Or it's like an inner calendar, which and by listening to music or by listening to something or watching a film or something like that, I can sort of open up gateways into the memory bank.
Oh, that's
quite
cool.
Easily. And that can be a little overwhelming sometimes. Mm-hmm. Because you're just like, oh shit, you know, you just transform yourself into this place. And it's not only negative, it's just like, mm-hmm. it's sometimes hard to know what to do with that information and those feelings, because yeah. you remember so clearly, like, oh, this song. Oh yeah. I remember I was at his house and that film had just come out and we started mm-hmm. talking about that. And then on the evening he went over there, and oh yeah, it was an election just the day before. And
wow.
And you just,
you'd be a great witness.
I don't know. As I said, I'm also a very imagined. I have a wild imagination. So it sort of spins. I wouldn't trust myself.
Yeah. It can fill in the blanks sometimes.
No. Yeah. This is why I work in the entertainment business.
As you should.
Yeah.
We have kept you so long. We want to thank you so much for doing this. We can't tell you how much we appreciate it, how much our listeners are going to appreciate it. And this has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. Thank you so much for taking the time to do this.
Thank you very much for having me. It was very nice talking to you too.
You are welcome back anytime. And again, this was great. Thank you so much. And we hope to see you.
Thank you.
Again soon.
Definitely.
Likewise. All right. Take care of yourselves.
You too.
Bye.
Whoa. So that was the coolest thing that's ever happened.
I don't even know what to say. That was just like so much fun.
He was so lovely.
Yeah.
That was amazing. Obviously, you guys listened to the episode. You saw how lovely he was.
He answered all of the questions that we, like, sent in. That's crazy.
Yeah, we were trying to be good with time, and we went way over, and he just hung out and chatted. That was, like,
glorious.
We could have done that for another 6 hours. I sure would have, but I wasn't going to make anybody else. That was amazing. We want to thank Tobias so much again.
And his whole team.
His entire team for making this happen, because they've all been so amazing. Guys, go listen to Ghosts. Go to the shows.
Buy some tickets.
Telling you, when I say that the shows, the rituals are worth it.
Oh, yeah.
So worth it. I'm telling you, go. So it sounds like they have like stuff cooking, too.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. So stay tuned for whatever they have next. But I'm telling you, go listen, go get merch, go do all that stuff. Let's keep them around forever.
And we hope you keep listening.
And we hope you
keep
it
weird. But not so weird that you don't follow everything that Ghost does until the end of time. Bye.
If you like Morbid, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Hey, Morbid, this is Weirdos.
Since Elena betrayed me and didn't go through with our brilliant plan for opening episode 544, The Career Girl Murders Part 1, we thought that we'd get it right with this go-round, as we tell you about one of our favorite deep dives that you might have missed within our feed.
In August 1963, Patricia Tolles returned home from work to find her apartment demolished. Shaken, she contacted one of her roommate's fathers, who stumbled across a truly grisly murder scene.
The media created a narrative that would, to their benefit, sell newspapers.
Every headline set out to make single women feel afraid and deter them from pursuing personal independence, instead of focusing on how people are depraved and that we should stop assholes from being assholes. You can find this episode by following Morbid and scrolling back a little bit to episode 544, The Career Girl Murders Part 1, or by searching Morbid Career Girls wherever you listen to podcasts.